Ah, da ist meine Prime-Bestellung.
Was? Jetzt schon?
Nur eine Sache begeistert so sehr wie die schnelle Lieferung mit Prime. Und zwar das tolle Unterhaltungsangebot von Prime.
Was schauen wir uns an?
Heads of State, die neue Actionkomödie mit John Cena, Idris Elba und Priyanka Chopra Jonas. Sieht mega aus.
Schnelle, kostenlose Lieferung, geniale Unterhaltung und mehr gibt's bei Prime. Für nur 8,99 € pro Monat werde jetzt Prime-Mitglied. Die Inhalte können Werbung enthalten. Fortlaufende Mitgliedschaft. Mehr auf amazon.de/prime.
Hi everybody, Christy Lee from the Bob and Tom Morning Show. And along with Dr. Rob Shoemaker, who happens to be the CEO and president of the Indianapolis Zoo, we have started a new podcast and it's called Worth Your Time. We are going to be talking to a lot of different people in a lot of different areas of expertise. And we would really like for you to join us on our journey. And we'll be having episodes up twice a month, and you can find them where you find all of your podcasts, you know, Spotify, Apple, you get it. You know where you find your podcasts, but we'd really like for you to check us out. It's called Worth Your Time with Christy Lee and Dr. Rob Shoemaker. Why don't you take a listen?
Welcome to Worth Your Time with your hosts from the nationally syndicated Bob and Tom Show, Christy Lee, and the president and CEO of the Indianapolis Zoo, Dr. Rob Shoemaker. Our mission, to inform, entertain, and educate with guests from all aspects of life. We guarantee there isn't another podcast that features two hosts with such different backgrounds and discussions with remarkable people doing exceptional things. So let's get started. Here are your hosts, Christy Lee and Dr. Rob Shoemaker.
Welcome, everybody. It's Worth Your Time. I'm Dr. Rob Shoemaker. I'm so glad that you are here today, and this is episode 3, but really episode 2 of our new podcast with my co-host Christy Lee. And today we're going to focus on Christy. In episode 1, we talked about me.
Yes.
Got into some of the details of my background and how I arrived at where I am today. We're going to do the same thing with Christy. I have a feeling a lot of you know a lot more about Christy than you knew about me. Maybe we'll try and find some things you didn't know as you go, or maybe not.
Maybe. My life's been pretty much an open book on the air for 40-some years. For those of you who don't know, I am affiliated with the Bob and Tom Show, which is a nationally syndicated radio show based out of Indianapolis, Indiana. And I was born here. That's very rare in the radio business to be working where you were raised. Usually,
it's unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, very. I have never worked in another market. I took a little sabbatical and lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico for a year and a half. Followed a boy. I don't recommend that. No, it was great. He's a great guy. He's really well known in this business. So I'm not. No, it was a good growing experience.
What's his name?
Milk. But he's a great guy. But anyway, so I'm very fortunate in the fact that I was able to stay in my hometown. But it does, I guess I don't have a worldly view, if you will. I'm a born and raised Midwesterner. Proud of that. If you were listening to our last episode, Dr. Rob, you talked about how you were raised by a single mom.
I was.
My parents divorced as well when I was 10 or 11, so it was early 70s, which you and I talked about earlier is very rare at that time.
It sure was in where I grew up.
Yeah, and Catholic.
Yeah.
And my parents' situation, we moved the ladies, my sister and my mom and I, into a trailer court, into a trailer park, and my dad moved into the apartments across the street, and it really did work out well. My parents had a very nice divorce. He was always still in our lives, even when my mom remarried. It was as good as it could be expected. But well,
that's an unusual story.
Yeah,
I don't hear that very often. Let's put it that way.
And I've modeled my own divorce after that. Yeah. My kid's dad and I are still very close, and I'm still very close to his side of the family, So that was a good role model for me. But growing up in a trailer park.
Here in Indianapolis.
And I didn't know I was really poor. I never thought that. You said something, too, that your mom never said, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Right.
There are a lot of similarities in our stories for our backgrounds. Because my mother, who recently passed away, she never said that either. She never said, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. Because she was the oldest of 9, and all of her brothers got to go to college. But my grandfather wouldn't pay for the girls to go to college because they were supposed to get married and have babies.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to waste the money.
Yeah.
I think from my mom's perspective, and she was the oldest of 9, so she raised kids almost her whole life. Mm. So in 1958, she gets married, and then, you know, a few years later,
the girls come along, we come along. And then, like you said, unexpectedly, we have a divorce situation. She has, you know, high school education, some accounting. She becomes an office manager. You don't make a lot of money. In fact, I found one of her pay stubs just recently and I was stunned. I was like, oh my gosh. But I say all of those things and I'm saying it with love because I never felt poor. I never felt like I was missing out on anything. They got me a car when I was 16. I had new school clothes every year. It was until I met my boss over here, I didn't know that I was white trashy. I didn't know that. But
I didn't say that.
I said that. But when I was in high school, like you, I was a good student. And I went to a public school that had a lot of opportunities, things that I was never exposed to in my Catholic, you know, growing up in Catholic school system. It was a great basics.
Yeah, but they're usually not very well funded.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was very interested in the time in aerospace, aviation.
Wow.
I wanted to fly. I wanted to fly jets. I wanted to be in the Air Force. I have an uncle that is a career Air Force guy. And I was fascinated by it. And I'm fascinated by flying and rockets and all that. And we had an aerospace section in our high school. And I started taking these classes in the vocational area of the school, which was also really different a woman.
So this was like a VOTEC class on engineering, meaning maintenance or building?
No, we had an AMP class where I did not take the airframe and power plant class, but you could have.
Wow.
I took basic ground school there. I took a rocket design class there. I took what's called a aviation careers class where I worked at the airport for a little bit. And I took apart a 737 on the inside and redid it one summer. And I was just really, I'm really fascinated by airplanes.
So this is all on the mechanical side.
Mm-hmm. I've always been very interested in cars and fixing things or not. I don't fix things, but the way they run, and I'm a car geek.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I'm taking these classes in my sophomore year. And one of the guys in my class said, you ought to take radio. We had a radio station at the high school. He goes, you ought to take this radio class. It's really easy. It's a grade A. And I was all about keeping my GPA up. And I go, oh, that sounds like a fun class. I'll do that.
Wow.
So I took this class my junior year, and I was about a semester in, and my teacher goes, you really have a talent for this. I go, what? He goes, no, seriously. You should really consider doing more. Take another class. Can you take radio and television? Because we had a TV station at the same time. I go, sure, I'll do that. So I ended up in radio and TV my senior year. And that year I got really lucky because my teacher was working at a radio station part-time and he would get his good students jobs. So I started working at a commercial radio station when I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And I was very lucky. And I know that. I was very lucky. But I never thought of it like, this is going to be my career. Like you said, you knew right away you wanted to be a zoo guy.
Always.
I always thought I wanted to fly planes. Yeah. I just thought I loved aviation. And I was like, okay, this is fun. And back then I was making great money part-time in radio. They thought it was a really cool thing. So they were paying me good money and I was better than working at Arby's, but I was really good at the drive-thru. Welcome to Arby's. May I take your order, please? So I thought, okay, this is fun. I'll pay my senior year in high school. I'll just do this. During my senior year in high school, my teacher also talked me into getting what was called at the time a first class license from the FCC, which is an engineering license. And so it meant going to his house and the weekends and going to classes after school and learning about capacitors and resistors. And
so this was not part of your high school curriculum?
No, it was on top of my high school curriculum.
And
so this was extra.
And who?
Radio teacher, my radio teacher, Dana Webb, changed my life.
But who gave you that license? Where did that come from?
I studied with Dana. I think there were five or six of us that took his class.
Yeah.
And then we would go through the summer, and then we would go through the winter. And then you'd go to Chicago and take the test with the FCC.
FCC, wow.
Federal Communications Commission. And you had to have a first-class license back in the day to operate a transmitter, to operate a TV station. It was very rare. This was 1978.
Wow.
And I'm not patting myself on the back, but I would never have done this if he hadn't said, trust me, this is going to pay off for you someday. And I go, okay. And I like learning. I'm like, engineering is fascinating to me. And I'm like, okay.
And were you the only woman?
There was another girl. And then there were four guys. Wow. There were six of us. And I passed. I got my license. So I didn't think anything of it. I packed my little bags and I go down to IU to college at Indiana University because I, like you, my mom really wanted me to go to college. My father was a biologist and was really into conservation way early. Yeah. He was a water pollution control specialist way before anybody talked about that. And he had always wanted to go to medical school and couldn't afford it because he was really poor. My dad grew up in Virginia, but in the hills of Virginia, wow, like Appalachian country. So he never got to go to medical school. So he was pushing me to get a biology degree. I still wanted to do aviation. And then I had this radio thing hanging over my head. So I just went to IU on a liberal arts. I go, I'm just going to go, like you said, figure this out.
Yeah, figure it out.
I lasted about a semester. Wow. And I came back at Christmas and I was like, I am not happy. I'm done with school. I don't want to be around people that I was around in high school, and I just didn't assimilate well. I did not do well. So I said to my mother, I said, if I find a full-time job during this Christmas break, do I have to go back? And she said, absolutely not. It's your life. You do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So I found a job, and I ended up working at a hospital just to have a job and going to school. I said, I'll compromise and go part-time. So I worked at Indiana University Hospital and could go to school part-time. And all this time, I'm still dabbling in radio, wherever I had a part-time job. I would work a weekend shift here.
So, of course, that had to be at a station, given the way the technology was at the time.
Yeah, it was a radio station.
You would get a part-time whatever.
Yeah, I was at a country music station for a long time.
This was just playing music.
Yeah.
Radio show.
Yeah, just a radio show on the weekends.
Got it.
And then one day, the country station said, we would like to hire you full-time, but we can't put you on the air. It'll be like a fill-in shift. Like, you will do news one day, you'll do this. It was college in a year, or I wasn't even there a year. And I go, heck yeah, I'll do that. So I quit my job at the hospital, quit going to school, and I started working at the radio station full time. And I got to do everything. I got to schedule commercials, make commercials, write copy, do news, do an air shift. It was great. Gary Havens, thank you.
All came out of, like, where did you learn how to do that?
They taught me. I went to the station and somebody would show me how to do something and I would do it.
But this was professional level and you came in and just learned.
Yeah, and I was 18 years old, 19 years old.
Wow.
I got real. Dana Webb worked there, my teacher, and his students had a good reputation. And then I worked with a couple of people from my high school there. And it was a wonderful experience. And everybody was so helpful and... But I was sitting at my desk, I'll never forget it, in between the transmitter room and they made this little makeshift area for me to have a desk. And my phone rang and it was a TV station and they said, we hear you have a first class license. And I said, yeah. And the guy goes, I need a vacation relief engineer and we would really like to hire a woman. Are you interested in interviewing? And I go, I've never been in a TV station in my life. And he said, that's not a deterrent. Come on down. Wow. I go, okay. So I went down to the ABC affiliate here and WRTV, I will say it, and talked to the man and he showed me around and he goes, I think you could do this. And I go, I think I can do this. And I got hired. And I was the first female television engineer in that building. And it was the most, I look back now, and it was so funny. It was 1980, and EOE was just coming in. And so I had all these old...
What do you mean?
Equal opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
And so I had all these older guys who were all... And we were union. We were an IBEW. We were... Like, I was union. And I had all these sweet old guys, and they'd look at me, and they'd go, what? And I know one man, Otis, bless his heart, may he rest in peace. Otis made me a little stool because I couldn't reach routers and I had a hard time with... And
so people don't know you're also petite.
I'm very short.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was very sweet. They were very... It was like working with a bunch of grandpas for a while. And then there were obviously young people my age, but it was a wonderful experience. And I worked my way up and... I thought I would end up there forever. I thought I was going to be a television engineer forever.
This was totally behind the scenes.
Totally behind the scenes.
Wow.
I really wanted to be in front of the camera deep down. And I thought, well, maybe if I'm in the station, I'll be able to work my way. Because you're a heck of a lot easier to work if you're known and people know you. But in that particular station, it was very union, and engineers didn't go on camera, and on-camera guys didn't run my camera. Or it was just very strict. Whatever. So I was there about 6 years, and then that Albuquerque break came. Wow. And I quit, and I moved to Albuquerque, and I worked for a TV station out there for about a tenth of the pay.
And they called you, you called them. How'd that happen?
When I got to Albuquerque, I went with a guy. He got a job out there, and I followed him.
We were engaged. So the following the guy was the reason you went to Albuquerque, right. Not the job.
Yeah, I didn't have a job.
So you were out there.
I was out there, okay. And got the job.
Okay.
And when I had left Channel 6, I was a technical director, which means I was the person sitting behind the board when you're watching TV, watching the news. I would switch all the cameras, yeah, and do all of that. I was making no money there either.
So this was like broadcast news?
Yes.
That kind of style. Camera one.
I would be the one taking, yeah, camera one, camera two.
Whatever. Got it.
So in Albuquerque, I got a job there at the TV station, and it was just miserable. It did not work out, neither that nor the relationship. And I came home one day, and Bob and Tom were looking for a newswoman. I'm going to make this really short because there's a lot longer. But anyway, I ended up back in the radio station working with Bob and Tom. And that was in like 86. And I've been here ever since. With a little bit of a break, I did a lot of television sports back in the day. So that was fun, which had I started earlier, I think I would have probably done that full time. Wow. Because I really love doing live sports broadcasting. Mm. I love it. It's so much fun to be involved in a live show. Even when I was a technical director, I loved switching live events like telethons or whatever, wrestling shows or whatever a live event was. But it's even more fun when you're on camera and you're doing it. I got to work for the NBA and I did 3X games for ESPN and just a lot of really, I did lacrosse. I'd never seen a lacrosse game in my life. Hosted a go-kart show where I had a band.
Okay, hold on. So you went by that, yeah, kind of fast.
Yeah.
So you were doing the way as you're doing color commentary on a lacrosse mat. No.
I was a sideline reporter.
What's the difference?
Oh, a lot. So, I didn't have to talk that much.
Sideline reporter, meaning, and you knew nothing about the sport?
I learned.
How'd you do that?
I got a phone call from ESPN and they said, what do you know about lacrosse? And I said, I've never seen the sport. And they go, you need to learn because you're going to start in November with the major indoor lacrosse league, which was called the Mill back then. And it was total ESPN2. When they first came on the air, they just wanted content. And I don't know if you're too young, you may not remember, but it was just in your face and a lot of camera movement and fun. And they wanted it to be hip and cool. And so I don't think you really needed a lot of experience.
Okay,
to
got
be
it.
Honest
got
with
it.
You. But I learned and had a blast. I was with the Mill for 4 or 5 years.
That was full time.
No, it was just weekends. I would get off the air here on Friday mornings and I'd get rushed to the airport and we'd do a game on Saturday night and then I would fly home Sunday morning. So I'd have one day off a week. That was it. But it was so much fun. It was so much fun. And then I had a go-kart show.
So what was fun? Explain what was the fun part.
First of all,
because I've never even been, I have.
To a lacrosse game?
I have, like high school level, but not a professional.
No, that's totally different. Professional indoor lacrosse is like a combination of basketball and hockey. So it's indoors, so you have boards, so the balls can't fly away like they do when you're out.
Yeah.
The field's shorter, and it's a faster paced game, and it's just, it is like hockey. We had timeout, I'd get in, and I was on the bench with the teams. So if somebody got thrown out of the game and they were put on the hockey thing, I could interview them live.
All live.
Yeah, it was so fun. It was really fun. And the cities I had never really, I was in Boston, Philly, Rochester, Philadelphia, and Buffalo, New York. It was just a really cool experience.
Yeah.
Plus, there are a lot of hot lacrosse guys. I'm not going to lie. It was a girl doing a lot of fun. And then I think we really had a lot of fun with the same production crew. We did a go-kart show here at the Velodrome, out at the Major Taylor Velodrome in Indianapolis, where we put go-karts on a high-banked bicycle track, basically, and made a course out of it.
That sounds fine.
But this is like ESPN.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
This was the same thing. We had a band. I had the victory couch. I had this big leather couch. And if you won, you got to sit on the couch.
Well, of course.
And Danica Patrick was one of my drivers.
Really?
She was like 12.
Wow.
Yeah. Sam Hornish Jr. Some pretty famous race car drivers came out of our little go-kart series. It was a lot of fun. So anyway, fast forward through all of that, I ended up settling in radio. And it's been a great experience for me because when I had children very late in life, I remember I was 38 years old when my first child was born, and I had been working the NBA for 5 years. And the last game of the season, I was 3 months pregnant, and I'll never forget, somebody came up to me and they go, "Are you pregnant?" I was like, "You never ask a woman that, right?"
And never.
I go, never.
Never in
and
the
I
history
said, well,
of the world do you,
you
ask that question.
Sir,
if
yes,
you're a man,
I am.
Never.
And he was a man.
Women get a pass on that. Men?
Men. It was a man.
Look, this is not an advice show.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, if you're a man, don't ever let those words come out of your mouth unless you are the father. That's fine. If you are the father.
And you know exactly what's going on.
And luckily I've never done that, but
I know people.
I know some people that have done it, and there's some hilarious stories about it. But suffice to say, never in your life, never, ever, unless you are the father, and you're sure you're the father.
Yes.
Do you say those words to a woman? Please continue.
Fortunately, I was, and I said, "Yes, I am. This will be my last television appearance." And I did not, did I do any TV after that? I did a lot of voiceover after that. I did some voiceover work for a couple of NBC sports award shows and things like that. But there's a dirty little secret about television for women, especially. You got to be pretty now. And I was never pretty. I was like, I'm like the girl next door, for those of you who can't see, because this is audio. I've never been like Aaron Edwards pretty. I'm just the girl next door, and I had a lot of fun. I used to wear a ball cap a lot of times. I'm just me.
People are Googling Aaron Edwards right now.
Yeah, because she's really pretty. She's hot. But I knew that my TV days were over, and I had a lot of fun doing it, and I'm very blessed that I got the opportunity. But this is my home. This is the Bob. We're sitting actually in the Bob and Tom studios right now as we speak. They don't know. Don't tell Tom. He might be mad at me. He might charge me rent. And I've been so fortunate because this job has offered me more than I'd ever thought I would get to do. Our producer, Chris Spangle, and I were just talking. Chris's mom and I were best friends in grade school. That's how small a world it is.
Wow.
But Chris and I grew up very similar, too. And we were saying that we've, because of this job, have been exposed to things that we never... If you would have talked to 18-year-old me and said, "You're going to be a trustee at the zoo someday," I'd be like, "Oh, come on."
Right.
There's no way.
Right.
So I am so lucky and so fortunate that this job is... Like you said, I love going to work every day, and I love meeting new people, and I love the doors that it's opened up, and I wish everyone had these opportunities. Trust me, I know I'm blessed. I know I'm lucky, and I would love for everyone to have this opportunity because it's a dream. I never, ever in my wildest dreams woke up and go, "I'm going to be a broadcaster. Yeah. I'm going to be, you know." No. I rolled with it. I always get... There's someone in my life who's very goal-oriented. And what are your goals this year? I go, get up and go to work the next day. I've never been that person. I've never been a goal person. I've never set goals and said, "Oh, I want to make this amount of money by this age," or "I want to have this job by this age." I've never been like that. I've just always just rolled with it. And obviously, the ball went pretty well from my favor. And I'm very blessed and very lucky. I wouldn't change a thing.
That's phenomenal. And two things come to my mind when I listen to you tell that incredible story. And this part is true for me too, that there were two or three people in your professional life that changed the course of everything.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I could say that too. There are two or three people, and I know without them, I don't know what in the world. I don't know how it would have turned out. Just really incredibly generous, wonderful mentors. And the other thing that it makes me realize, and this in a good way, is how dramatically different our backgrounds are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, perspective. And I think that's what makes this really compelling for me, is I think we come at things with some shared experiences, certainly, but totally different perspectives, totally different backgrounds. That's what's exciting to me as we move forward with the podcast, is having that kind of dynamic when we talk to really incredible people. I think it's going to be remarkable. I don't know where else you can find that right now.
Yeah, I think we're both very lucky people.
For sure.
And I'm not going to say that I'm not lucky, but I'm also not going to say that I didn't work my butt off. That's the other thing that a lot of people see. Oh my gosh, now, even my own kids, I've had to go, hey, wait a minute. Before you were around, I was working 7 days a week. There were times I had three jobs. I worked a lot of hours. I worked every holiday, Thanksgiving. I did. I worked a lot. And people say, oh, what a great gig you got. You work 4 hours a day and that's it. Hardly. It doesn't just fall in your lap like that. It looks like maybe it's that easy, but it's not. And ask anybody in the business, in entertainment or, I'm an overnight success. No, those people are not overnight successes. Everybody's had to pay their dues. Everybody's had to work. That's one of the things that, and I have Gen X's or millennials or whatever they are now. I have these kids. I know. I was reading an article the other day about this woman who got her first 9-to-5 job. And she was like, I can't do this. I don't know how people do this and have a family. And it just, I wanted to go, you just do it. You do what you have to do.
Yeah.
It's, nothing's going to be handed to you. You have to work hard. And it, no matter what your job is, and I have to say, if I weren't doing what I'm doing now, and I'm not saying I'm better than anyone else, but every job I've had, I've always had fun with it, or I've enjoyed it. Or, and I haven't always worked in radio. When I was at the hospital, and I spent a lot of time in the hospital recently, I enjoy being in the hospital. I enjoyed being around those people, learning from doctors and nurses, and fascinating to me, that whole atmosphere. And I think no matter where you are or what you're doing, there's a great way to look at it and not go, oh my God, this is horrible and drudgy and blah, blah, blah. There's always, and that's why I want to do this podcast, because there's always something new and good, and there's something to look forward to, I hope, for everyone, and look at it. Maybe wake up and look at it at a different perspective today. Maybe go, hey, wait a minute, it's not so bad.
You know, the thing that resonates with me when you talk about your career and the things you've been through is one of the things that I didn't know that story till now. I didn't know all of that. Mm-hmm. But what's one of the most interesting things to me about some people, and it's a topic that really intrigues me, is how somebody stays relevant when in their field. And that's what you've done. No matter what, you've stayed interesting, you've stayed relevant. And it's true, right? Oh, don't you think it's true?
I hope so. I still have a job, so I guess, yes,
but,
it's true.
Well, no, but it seems obvious to me. You're super relevant. But that's not easy. It's not easy to stay relevant in your field. That takes a lot of hard work. So I think however much work it takes to get where you are, staying relevant, man, that's tricky. And for people that want to just coast, which that never appealed to me. I never thought, let me get to the point where I could just coast. No. If I'm not doing something interesting or relevant, I'm not that inclined to even care about it. But how you stay relevant, I think that's a really interesting characteristic for people. And of course, you can name off a bazillion different people. You can also think of people who lost it, who stopped being relevant,
right?
And that's interesting too, and how you wind up dealing with that. But that's what's incredible to me is throughout all of that, and it doesn't mean you did exactly the same thing the whole time, because you didn't.
No.
But you stayed relevant, and you're still super relevant.
Well,
that's incredible to me.
Thank you.
It's a talent. It's a talent in itself.
I think it's... part of me is sad that I didn't go to college, because I would like to have the background that Tom or Josh has. They're very literate and remember things. I don't remember things very well to begin with, but I'm really curious. I'm very curious about how things work or why they work, and I love learning. I still love learning.
Yeah,
I'm never going to be too old to learn something new. I hope, because I just find it fascinating. I find what you do fascinating. Yeah. I find, and we're going to talk about this down the road, but the latest thing for me was the whole Conservation Indianapolis Prize, meeting these scientists from around the world that, I mean, I'll never forget the lady who won a few years ago who does lemurs in Madagascar.
Yeah, Pat Wright, Dr. Pat Wright.
Pat goes, you need to come down to Madagascar and see lemurs with me. And I said, I would love that. She goes, I just discovered a new rainforest. Yeah. I would love to share it with you. And I go, I can't find my car keys and you're discovering rainforests? How fascinating is that?
She's an incredible
person. She is an incredible person. Yeah. We're going to have her on the show, I guarantee you, because I am
she's incredible.
So blown away by her. But just to meet those kinds of people, and to have the opportunity to be put in the position to meet those people is my blessing.
Yeah.
That's how I feel blessed. Because I, just in that short weekend that I was around those scientists, it touched me. It really touched me.
I hear that a lot. I hear people say that, and I mean, we'll have to devote some more time to talk about it, but it's just incredible conservationists, and people will say, wow, I look at what they're doing and I think, what have I done? Nobody, that's not the intention of it at all.
Oh gosh, no. None of us will be like that.
No. The intention is to celebrate the incredible good work.
Right.
But if it makes people more conservation minded or more conservation literate, wonderful. We've done a phenomenal thing. But that's the kind of intersection I really look forward to on this show. You had a little bit of background about me.
A little bit about Christy.
And in a nutshell.
But there are a lot of great stories that go around all of that. We could probably delve into some.
Yeah, that's probably true. But yeah, I think we're good. Anything else we need to know about you today?
Nothing.
We can just start now. We can start talking to other people.
Yeah, we can start talking to other people because I think we've bored you all enough with our stories. No, we are worth your time.
We are worth your time.
Not going to be a boring moment on the show, by golly, not one. And we're going to have a new episode coming up soon. So please be sure and subscribe to Worth Your Time. Tell all your friends about the podcast. And I look forward to our next visit.
Ah, me too. Thanks, Christy.
Thanks, Rob.
You've been listening to Worth Your Time with Dr. Rob Shoemaker and Christy Lee. If you like what you hear, please give a review wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to tell your friends. Word of mouth is the best compliment. Thanks to our producers, Chris Spangle of Leaders and Legends LLC. You can reach him at leadersandlegends.net. Also, thanks to Sophie Ritz. I'm Christopher Geisen. Thanks for joining us.
Jim Rome takes on sports.
Why? Because you're not playing me.
With rapid-fire takes.
And a lot to get to, and I'm not sure you're going to like all of it. Honestly, I don't even care if you like all of it or not. I have a job to do.
Scorching debates.
On any given week, you have lots to beef about. Take advantage of it. Get up in here.
He's the spitfire of sports smack.
She's not my fault. We will get to all of that.
The Jim Rome Show podcast.
Get up in here, and we'll beef later on. What's your beef?
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.
You've been warned.